I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome back. It's the A to Z of festivals with Rob DeBank. It's a gloomy October day, pinch punch first of the month and all that, and it's kind of raining outside. So we thought, what better way to brighten up our day than to talk about Arcadia? And we welcome Bertie. How you doing, Bertie?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Guys, your partner Pip, and you guys, you know, you set up Arcadia. How long ago was that now?
It was in 2007, 2008, it was born.
Okay, and when did we first meet you at Bestival?
I think we came in 2010. Okay. 2009, 2010. Yeah, it was early days.
I was going to Google it on the way up, but I thought, you know, sometimes it's nice just to be educated on what was actually happening. But yeah, I mean, you know, that was so a couple of years into the formation of Arcadia. We wanted to do something brave at our festival, and you guys were doing some pretty outstanding stuff. So, I mean, for anyone that's just tuned in and, you know, they're thinking Arcadia, it kind of rings a bell. Think of, you know, Glastonbury. Think of the most mad spider looking fire invention ever, with Carl Cox or Fatboy Slim on the decks. Think of this year with Pangea, yeah. With a huge kind of crane looking animal with, yeah, again, fire and video screens, and, you know, every DJ worth their salt playing on it. Lords of Lightning, yeah, anything to do with kind of heavy machinery, metal, grease and dirt, that's you guys, isn't it?
Sounds about right, yeah. Definitely.
So what is the sort of Arcadia philosophy?
We basically love pushing the boundaries, and we love creating moments where people feel joy in some way or form, and use, you know, art, engineering, science, sculpture, all these different things at our disposal to sort of boil them together into experiential moments. And yeah, that's what really drives us. And the things that the how we do it is almost like second to that. We also love working in recycled materials. We love working in 360 degree in the round environments, and it's kind of like creating that sort of dancing round a fire moment on a massive scale with some mental bits of machinery and some crazy science. And that's kind of, yeah, that's our world.
Yeah, amazing. And you, yeah, I mean, you have created some of the most magical moments at some of the UK's best festies. So yeah, I mean, Boomtown, Glastonbury, our own little show. So we'll get back into that in a minute, but I wanted to talk to you about your kind of first festival experience, and not necessarily with Arcadia, but, you know, I always ask people on this podcast, what's the magic of festivals for you? What is it that first got you into that?
When did you get the bug?
Yeah.
Well, I think my first proper sort of really memorable experience was in 1990. So I was 10, And my dad came to my school sort of unannounced, even to me, and just sort of said, right, we're going to Glastonbury.
Really?
I remember him.
At the age of 10?
Yeah, I remember him. I didn't really have a sort of conventional upbringing, to say. And I remember him having a sort of argument with the headmaster and a sort of door slamming and him sort of saying, you know, it's educational, and us just sort of getting in the car and going. And I don't know.
Literally, from he literally from picked you up and took you straight to Glastonbury in school shorts.
Yeah, and it was quite mad. He had some blag of getting in, and we got in, and he gave me like a £10 note, which at the time was quite a good amount of money, and like an army sleeping bag, and was like, look, this is where we are, but you know, just like, you know, you can kind of do your thing, really. And it was insane, really, looking at it now, what that was. But I was able to kind of wander around and experience this world which I had never seen or even knew existed, and explore it. And the rave scene was just kind of kicking off, so there were, like, you know, rave rigs everywhere. There was like the KLF, there was some really big things going on there that, when I look back now, it was kind of the beginnings of some really amazing things that, you know, I'm still part of now. And there was this mad avant-garde circus called Archaos. You might have heard of them, but they kind of like came out of France, and they took circus and turned it into something completely different, where they were blowing things up and juggling with chainsaws and things like that. And I saw them do their show on the main stage, on the pyramid stage. And that was when it was a sort of corrugated iron structure, and they had these two cars on the top of it, and at the beginning of their show they blew those up and they slid down the stage into these big pits, and all this sort of fireworks went off and stuff. And it just blew my mind. It just stretched my horizons from being, you know, a school kid that had seen a few things, to being like, wow, there's a whole parallel universe out here that's going on. And I think from then on, it kind of like stuck in me as a thing that I was drawn to magnetically. And I realised that there was a whole thing to interact with and get involved with. And that was the beginning for me, actually.
That's so incredible that your dad took you there as a 10-year-old. You saw Archaos and that whole Joe Rush, Mutoid Waste kind of wonderland of twisted bits of rusty metal, and here you are now doing that yourself.
It's lovely. Yeah, it feels great, and I'm very, very grateful for obviously my dad for having that sort of
well done, dad,
impulse and just going for it no matter what. And obviously Glastonbury for us is a huge part of our whole sphere. It really is kind of home for us. And just the opportunities and the way its moral compass works and all the different amazing magical things that come out of it, I'm truly grateful for it.
I'm sort of sitting here because this is the first year, this year was the first year that we took our kids, and we took the 13, 11 and 9 year olds, and I have to say, embarrassingly, we stayed in an Airbnb because we just weren't sure if obviously they love camping, they stay at our festivals, but it was just like we just wanted to take it a bit gently with them. So I feel like a complete fraud, seeing as your dad took you there with a tenner and an army sleeping bag. Did it feel safe? I mean, did you know what you were?
Did
you know where you were and what you were doing?
I knew where I could go to find them, but just the ability to sort of explore something of that scale on your own is also quite magical, because you completely find your own way. But I think for kids to get involved in festivals like that, that have got such a history and such an amazing kind of cultural melting pot, I think is a hugely educational thing, actually.
Yeah, our kids didn't want to leave, and I will never be allowed to go on my own ever again, which is where I've sort of dug my own grave, because it's like, Dad, when's Glastonbury next year? It's like, yeah, all right, you know, it's what me and mum do, that's like our time off.
That's really cool. Yeah, my littlest boy, Jimmy, thinks that Glastonbury is like always there.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're sort of driving
that's
down
the dream.
And he's like, can we go to Glastonbury? And I'm like, well, it's not there. And he's like, well, what do you mean? You know, and it's he thinks it's there existing all the time. It's not just there for a weekend. It's,
that's too much by anyone's standards, especially Michael's. Okay, cool. So that was your kind of first festival experience. And then, I mean, like you said, we met you a couple of years into this you know, philosophy and this way of living and this kind of business that you'd built up, which is pretty, it's pretty anarchic, isn't it? And kind of, you know, it goes against the grain of a lot of stuff, because it's a very, you know, kind of a industrial looking thing that you guys do, and no one else was really doing that since the sort of Archaos or Mutoid Waste thing. So how did you, I mean, did you guys just build something small to start with and think, right, let's build a flamethrower, and then it suddenly turned into the spider? Or
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like all good things that sort of start small, it's an evolutionary journey. And I think we had both been on our own different journeys into festivals, parties, all these different things. And I'd been putting up massive structures around the world for, you know, concerts and theatre shows and all this sort of stuff. And Pip had been off working with Joe, his brother, building mad sculptures and taking those around. And we'd actually known each other as kids, and we kind of came back together and we bumped into each other at a festival in Spain, and really sort of round a campfire we both kind of identified that there was something we felt that was really missing from festival environments. And although there was a, you know, big focus on bands and things, in terms of like experiential, immersive kind of visual things where all the different elements are tied together into an atmosphere, we realised that wasn't really happening. And we kind of set out with a sort of basic concept from that point, and a sort of pile of interesting scrap that we found, and a mate's cow shed, and things that we sort of blagged and borrowed, and pulled it together and drove it forwards with passion. And we built the first thing that we built was the Afterburner, which is, you know, still one of our things we've got now. And we had no idea that it would have the magnetism that it had, and we took it to Glastonbury. Joe and Michael took us on and gave us the opportunity on the strength of a painting of it, kind of thing. It's literally all we have. We didn't have any designs or anything like that. We were completely punching above our weight in that sense, but we were really driven by our hearts. And we took this thing there and set it up, and we had no idea what it was going to do when we switched it on. We kind of thought it might be like a sort of chill out area where people really came and sat and enjoyed it. And we switched it on and put a little sound system on it and stuff. And it was kind of like when you switch a light on in the night and all these moths kind of like flood towards it. And it was like, before we knew it, there were thousands of people like raving and immersed in this thing and climbing on it and all around it. And all of the sort of synchronicity of the lights and the fire and stuff was really magical. And the sound system we had was far too small, and then we dug this trench across the field to a bigger sound system that was for another installation that wasn't being used at night, and we got that going. And then we had this whole field kind of like dancing to the beat with this thing we'd built in the centre of it. And I feel like that was the sort of point where, within the alchemy, all of the different elements came together and forged something that was to be what Arcadia was going forwards. And I'm really sort of grateful for those like humble beginnings of those times, because we would have only achieved it if we'd have truly believed in it. And I think belief's a really powerful thing in that.
Hallelujah. Yeah, absolutely. And so it's beautiful that you sort of made it up as it kind of made itself up as you went along. You didn't take a fully formed concept in there. I love the fact that you thought it's going to be a chill out area, and it's now probably, you know, one of the best, biggest sort of, you know, celebrations of electronic music and dance music around the world. So with its humble beginnings as a chill out space. So I was looking this morning. Obviously we had the Afterburner a few years at Bestel, so I know the structure really well. But the, just without getting too nerdy, but the technical stuff, like the spider's eyes and a Nimbus spy plane jets, is that right?
Yeah.
And then the grabbers are sort of log grabbers that you'd use in a sort of industrial woods and stuff. And
it's all repurposed stuff. And we get a real kick out of that, and particularly using stuff that's come from military backgrounds, of which we use a lot of. And you know, essentially those things have been made with a really negative intent, and you know, quite often they've been made with like the taxpayers' money, and it's not a very nice thing actually. And to take that and repurpose it into a machine that's designed to give people mass moments of joy for us gives us a real kick. And all that sort of scrapyard hunting and digging around and finding things, that really helps shape the things we make themselves, and it resonates in a very different way than something that was built out of set, or you know, something that was kind of more contrived, I suppose. So we rummage through the scrap piles with a concept, and then we find all this amazing stuff, and then we work out how to create a structure, a sculpture, a thing that technically is safe and works, and then add hanging
and doesn't kill people. I love that concept. And I mean, you say you dig around in scrapyards. I mean, I'm no expert on scrapyards, but I don't think you can go into your sort of normal bog standard scrapyard and find like a Nimbus spy plane or the sort of massive customs thing that you've transformed into the DJ booth. Like, what, you know, is there like a dark web of this sort of stuff? Like, where do you find it? Is there like a...
There's a sort of dark, not a dark web, but like a network, I suppose, of that kind of thing where that stuff has to get disposed of at some points. And it's actually getting harder for us. I feel like we sort of exhausted the UK's resources quite quickly.
Really?
Sort of after Burner, Bug, Spider, we kind of, you know, we had a real heyday with it, and we've actually started to look a little bit further afield now. So we've been, you know, over to like India, to where they cut up those big ships on the beaches, and we were scouting in Russia recently to see if we could find some things for Glastonbury. And actually, yeah, I found like a space shuttle, an old Soviet space shuttle.
Really?
On an airfield in Russia near Moscow, and we were like, wow, this is amazing. And we started investigating how we might kind of procure it, and yeah, we were kind of told in the end that, you know, if we went there and started trying to buy it, we'd be arrested as spies, and
seriously,
when all that poisoning stuff was going on and things like that.
Yeah.
So we were sort of told to F off, you know, quite politely by it. But yeah, it's really interesting, the sort of the different people that you meet and the different stories and the different places that you kind of get to go to try and find, so, you know, what someone might call scrap, but for us that's real building blocks of what we do.
Yeah, so it's like a sort of treasure hunt where you're going around the world trying to find these amazing when you sort of go to those places, are you just sort of, you know, how do you, if you find something, how do you get it back? You just on a transporter plane, or?
Yeah, that's a really big challenge, and that's when we started looking further afield for things. We realised that there was a limitation to the scale of what we could actually physically bring back to the UK. And with the Pangaea project, we actually almost realised that we couldn't actually get things of the scale we really wanted for Glastonbury because of the limitations of the sizes of what you can get on ships and then roads and all that sort of stuff. So we started looking a lot closer to home, and that was quite a good thing for us actually, to sort of to have done a wide search and understood what was out there and what the limitations were, but then to have found something really challenging close to home and not having to have move it so far, and the sort of, you know, the knock-on effects that has on the carbon side and all those different things. It was a really good process for us. So that massive thing that we dragged into the field at Glastonbury, like that, we had to cut that up into pieces small enough to be able to fit on the biggest truck you could get down the sort of Pilton wiggly road and into there. And even then there was sort of, we had to have police escorts and stuff like that, so we were sort of pushing ourselves right out to the very edges of what we could actually physically get there. We even looked at getting Chinooks to move,
really,
you know, army Chinooks.
Wow.
To sort of pick stuff up and move over there that was sort of big enough, but the weight limits on that were a bit restrictive, so that didn't happen.
So you're beating even the special forces at their own game. You can't like, no, we haven't got anything strong enough, Al-Qaeda have beaten us.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Again. This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate. So, I mean, it must be amazing, you know, you're saying to your kids, I'm just going, I'm off to the office for the day. I mean, your office is just this mad sort of God's own scrapyard.
It's a bit of a melting pot, really. And we're really blessed that we've sort of attracted a really amazing group of people that work with us. And our sort of projects are quite wild and sometimes vary and, you know, sometimes pretty mental journeys, really. But I think everyone's signed up to the idea that that's what we do. We spent years sort of doing what people have told us you can't do. And that's, again, you kind of get a bit more used to just doing that. That's part of the fun.
And how many people are working for Arcadia now?
It's very sort of project based. Full time, there's around 5-6 of us in the office, and then for a show like Glastonbury, we manage around 500 people. So it goes from being, you know, a small little crew of really kind of connected people right up to a huge kind of colossal bunch of people where we're organising the DJs, the bars, the food, all the artists, all the different things that come together, and so it's expansive depending on what we're doing.
That sounds very similar to us. This is us. We're in an office of 6 people, and then come one of the festivals, and it's like hundreds, thousands of people that you're sort of manhandling around. So, and did I hear that the spider's gone to China now?
The spider is currently sitting in our containers in Bristol.
Right.
We went to China last year for New Year's Eve, and it was quite a crazy journey for us, actually. It's quite a mad place to go and work. And it was exciting and terrifying in the same instance.
Did they get it? Did they?
They did, actually, yeah. We did a show there, and we were told all sorts of things, as you do, that, you know, they don't dance, they're not allowed to dance, and it's very restricted and all that sort of stuff. And when we dropped the show on them, we had some of the best crowd reactions that we'd ever seen. I mean, they were literally blown away. People were almost sort of knocked over by the flames, and it was remarkable from a cultural point of view. You know, this thing that we'd built out of scrap that we'd taken to the other side of the world, and we were interacting with a culture that we'd never had a chance to interact with before, and we were taking our art there, and watching that response was really amazing. But it's very surreal as well. I mean, they had like the army marching around in the middle of the festival, and like, I mean, it's very, very different to what we expect in terms of people having a good time. It's quite alarming, no, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it's a kind of tricky enough thing to describe to a Glastonbury veteran or someone going to Boomtown. You know, it's kind of like on the outer limits of, you know, right, okay, this is what it is. It's this huge metal thing that breathes fire and there's DJs on it. But to take that to somewhere like China, which presumably hasn't got that Western sort of mad art sort of
very surreal, I think, is probably the best way to describe it. But we haven't got plans to go back to China at the moment, but we're sort of incubating a load of different things. And for us, actually, focusing on Glastonbury is a really like positive thing for us, because it's we're really pushing a new envelope at the moment. So we're sort of looking at building a spherical, semi-spherical environment where we can move things around in the sky with that crane and completely take over the sky and use that as our stage. And that's a long-term project for us. So this year's Glastonbury was the beginning of that journey, and we're starting to work on next year already, which will be putting things on the end of the crane, and that will all culminate into a sort of evolutionary journey through the years, where we end up with a mental show and experience at the end of it. So we're sort of quite privileged to have some time to really focus on that at the moment.
Yeah, so that's kind of become your residency, hasn't it, Glastonbury? And I suppose because Pangaea this year looked incredible, but it makes sense that it's going to evolve. And I suppose it's like when you have a building site and the first crane goes up and then stuff starts getting built out from it. So it's kind of like that idea that it will expand.
It will grow, it will evolve, and we're really excited that the people's expectations are there and they can come on this journey with us, because quite a lot of art is kind of polished and presented in such a way that it's the finished thing. But for us, this journey is part of the artistic side of what makes it interesting and interactive. Yeah. And we're even, asking the people out there if people had any harebrained ideas that they wanted to come and collaborate with us and bring to the table, and the opportunity to collaborate with different people and bring new energy into to what we're doing. I feel like it's a really good opportunity, and I feel like actually I feel that Emily and Michael are really cunning in their support of that kind of thing, and just that sort of, you know, allowing youth culture to come into this big melting pot and grow, and as a sort of incubation place and grow into really amazing things. It's wicked to be like working alongside that.
They're always at the cutting edge, aren't they, and embracing the news. That's amazing. So tell us a little bit about the collaboration's obviously really important for you, as you said. On all your sort of socials, on your website, you're always casting out there saying, guys, you know, come to us with an idea and we'll embrace that. And then also your kind of green credentials, the recycling, the using kind of evil things in a good way. Do you just use biofuel? Is it the world's first biofuel?
We developed the world's first biofuel flame system, which was actually a really difficult project. And we did it for the Bristol won the Green Capital of Europe award in 2015. So we did a big headline show for that, which was amazing, in this sort of old Georgian square in the middle of Bristol, and did a big show there. And we built this flame system for that. And what was fueling that was fuel that had been made from chip shop waste around Bristol.
Really?
And it was a real opportunity for us to sort of showcase that things can be done differently, because you'll see that the sort of, you know, where the ecological situation meets the economic journey of the world at the moment, there's some real issues when it comes to resources and energy. You can track that back to energy being a really fundamental thing, and I think for us to have an opportunity to just showcase that things can be done differently is really important for how we then go back into our everyday lives and live things. So yeah, there's a big ethos behind us trying to use our opportunities to try and just show different ways of doing things, and we've always sort of enjoyed thinking out of the box, and it's possible for all of us to do that in a lot of senses, and things like that are great for that.
Yeah, and it's lucky Bristol's got so many chip shops.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fuel your
keep it in chips.
Fuel your afterburner. I mean, I remember no better feeling than standing in the afterburner, and at that time, didn't the controller for the actual jets, it was in there, wasn't it?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Yeah, so we could actually, the DJ could actually go fire off these massive jets, and it was like just incredible standing in there, you know, in this man-made thing, kind of looking out at the crowd going mental, and, you know, just knowing that every time he fired off the jets it was going to go even more nuts.
You survived us taking you up that really long thin ladder, didn't you?
Yeah,
the spider.
Yeah, with the harness.
Quite mental.
Is that like a nice sort of elevator now, or a sort of
yeah, it's all got walkways and things like that. Yeah. But I think back in those days, it was a ladder.
No, that was all part of the fun. And I love the fact that you talked there about, you know, the art of it, because, you know, I do see festivals as kind of art pieces, and it's, you know, is your favourite bit of creating these things, is it sitting down with Pip and kind of coming up with the ideas and that sort of bit of it, or is it the building of it on site before the festival actually opens and just looking at it and going, that is our creation, that's our piece of art? Or is it seeing it in midnight with Fortet playing and the whole place is going mental, or, you know, or is it all of those?
It's all of those things, and I think the real magic for us is that we, you know, we create the concept, which goes through to creating these things, hard to describe what they really are, and the real magic for me comes when a crowd comes and interacts with it, and you get that sort of energy and that magnetism and those ripples of energy going through the crowd, and people are all connected in this environment. For me, that's the real kind of like that gives me a lot of pleasure.
Yeah, and your structures do seem to come alive when that happens, don't they? And because they look a little, not creepy, but you know, they look like slightly animalistic, then you get that feeling that the machine is alive.
It comes to life. It all comes to life, and that's the one thing you can't rehearse.
No,
sort of do the theory on that. Really, you just have to open it up and see what happens.
Yeah, you don't know who's going to turn up. It's one of the most exciting things of doing festivals, isn't it? It's like, who is going to come? Is it going to kick off? Yes, we've won again. Okay, cool. Well, we're going to wrap it up in a sec, but just tell us about Arcadia Reach a little bit, because this looks really cool. You've got a non-profit set up that So you built a fire engine for a Calais refugee camp and work with carnivals, and you're doing a water thing in Sierra Leone.
Yeah, it's a community interest company that we set up to try and utilise the amazing array of people we've got working with us to do work that would benefit communities where we might be or work. And it's been amazing, actually. We've run a few smaller projects through it, and the thing we're working on at the moment is a well drilling rig to go down into Sierra Leone and literally go out into the jungle and put fresh water into villages where they've got, you know, nothing, and they're drinking water out of the rivers and getting ill as a result of it. And that's tied in with a sustainable agriculture program, which once there's water established, there agriculture program comes along and gives people seeds and shows them how to grow a nutritious range of food. And then from that point on, there's kind of the circular economy starts, and you can kind of lead them to it. So it's a really exciting thing for us to be using our skills that we've developed for making all these crazy things at festivals to go and deploy these kind of, like, again, mad machines, but with a different intent, into places where they'll make a real difference. So the thing we're doing at the moment is, yeah, raising funds for this well drilling truck, which is, it's a mission.
Is it going to look like a spider?
Probably not. But it's a pretty amazing old like fire engine that we've actually had for years, and it was an old riot truck from East Berlin in its beginning, and it's kind of literally sort of, again, another bit of repurposing.
Yeah, amazing.
It's going to have a whole life outside of the one it was intended for.
Wow, that is so inspiring. Thank you so much for coming in. And on your website, there is a link for people if they want to get involved and donate. And
please have a look. We're really up for donations, for skills, for, you know, if people want to come and get involved, it's a real open book, and I think it will be a really wonderful project to see come to fruition.
Wicked. Well, good luck with it all, and can't wait to hear about the plans for Glasgow 2020 and any other festivals you're doing. So, yeah, thank you to Bertie from Arcadia.
Thanks for having me.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now, and please remember to rate.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.